Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready for this? And this is the conference championships, AFC-NFC conference championships. One game in the books, a surprising, awesome ending, Green Bay versus Seattle. It's 28-22, the final at CenturyLink. And, you know, hats off to the Seahawks. They mustered and they came back and they are back in the Super Bowl seeking their second championship. So today we have a great show. We have Pete Richmeyer, NFL insider from Seattle, and he's going to be a happy camper because the Seahawks won today, and we'll talk to him about Seahawks football as well as NFL. And then in the beginning of the hour here, we are going to talk to Coach Chris Lambrus, former NFL Canada coach, and we'll be talking about the situation in NFL Canada and how it's similar to Australia, and then kind of touch base on where he's at now beyond the NFL days that he's with. So Coach Lambrus will be on here in about 10 minutes in the No Joke Football Huddle, and then we will have Pete Richmeyer at the top of the hour at about 5 o'clock or so, which is 8 o'clock Eastern, and we'll talk NFL Insider and whether we're going to have another season in the NFL and what's going on in the NFL going forward for this season in the NFL U.S. status. Along with the ever amazing guy, and LYFE, we have a great show today. Unfortunately, we do not have the lovely ladies today with us, the lovely Erica Lynn Anderson out with the flu, as well as Nkechi Free. So they will be back hopefully next week. They got a week to recover, and hopefully they'll be back next week. If not, we wish them well. And apparently Erica with the flu, probably a happy camper right now, Erica. She's probably up like 14-0, right, against the Colts. Eric, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, great. So I'm thinking that Eric is probably feeling better right now because they're up 14-0.
Yeah, she's probably feeling a lot better. I'm sure she has a nice big smile on her face right now.
Yeah, she was bundled up with the kids. I guess earlier she tweeted that she was bundled up with the kids and then she didn't like a certain movie, but I'm pretty sure this movie is turning out to be very great. First quarter, and they're up like 14-0. So we knew, and you've talked about it last week. You know the Colts were not that impressive. So at this point, you know, give us a little perception of what you see so far in the first quarter with the Colts.
Well, so far, I mean, you know, of course, New England is just pretty much asserting their New England-ness on them. the Colts had a key turnover, which seems to always happen every time I see them. Joshua Cribbs punt went right off his face mask, and New England recovered it in Colts territory, and that was the first touchdown. And then you know they came back with another touchdown, and 14-0 into the first quarter. So looks like they're off and rolling.
Yeah, and we knew coming in, you know, I predicted, you know, hey, Luck would beat Manning, but Manning and Denver did not seem like the team, you know, that was not beatable. They seemed ordinary, and I think that was a hurdle. And they didn't beat them impressively. But coming into this game, Belichick and Brady, they know what's at stake. I mean, this is another opportunity to put themselves in the history books. You know, another opportunity to go up against. And now we know, as of you know, an hour ago or so, Seattle is obviously is going for two championships, and who better to face than obviously Tom Brady for that title. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Seattle, another hard-fought game. know, they have just have no give up in them. They just keep coming. So I would expect the same thing would happen, you know, if New England gets out on top. I would expect them, you know, to, you know, keep fighting and, you know, probably make it close at the end. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and Green Bay started pretty hot, almost 14 points in the first quarter. Seattle, you know, seemed not in the game until probably the late third quarter where they held them scoreless, and they put up 7 points in the third. And then all of a sudden, everybody assumed, you know, that this is a runaway train with the Packers pretty much securing the win. And here's Seattle putting up almost 15 points. I think it was 16 points in the fourth quarter, if I'm correct. And then they muster that 6 points in the end in the overtime just to edge them. But, hats off to them. They stayed in it, and, they played as good as you're going to play, and then they get the win. So the bottom line is they go back to the Super Bowl.
Yep, and me being a Bears fan, I'm pretty happy with the way the game came out also. So if you're a cheesehead, this one's going to sting for a long time.
Yeah, and I know. I mean, you don't want to gloat in Chicagoland, but I guess you do want to gloat.
Not too much, but you kind of do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, no big deal. It's like me with the Niners and the Hawks, you know. And I don't know if I was rooting for, I don't know if my inclination was rooting for Green Bay just because I'm out of the West and I didn't want to see the, you know what I mean? So you get into that fan motion where you want somebody always told me, well, you got to root for your division. No, not really. No. Maybe the conference,
no.
But not the division.
Especially
and since Seattle is out of the West, yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. But so, Eric, a little bit of just excitement in these two games. Aaron Rodgers played pretty decent, didn't play too bad. I think he only had, like, one interception. Wilson was surprising. Was it surprising to you? I was surprised that Wilson threw three picks, but they weren't – I mean, it wasn't like, you know, you just threw them out there. It happens, I guess. You know, if you want to go that route.
Yeah, I know one of those was a couple of them were deflections, but for some reason it just seemed like they just could not get anything going. It was if they weren't turning the ball over, it was three and out, and that defense was getting worn down. But the Seattle defense was able to stand up a couple of times on those goal line stands, so. That easily could have been, 14 points there. So we could be looking at, Green Bay going to the Super Bowl just as easily. But, that's why they call it a team game, because that defense had to carry the offense for most of the game.
Yeah, and that's, that's what really boils down to is, at the end, who's going to want it more? And they were impressive. 6 points in overtime, they supplant themselves in the Super Bowl. So we're going to go into the No Joke Football Huddle. No Joke Football Huddle is sponsored by Zazzle.com. You can get your gear, leggings, hoodies, and cool tees at Zazzle.com. You can also get a discount. Use the code ORDERSHIP10. ORDERSHIP10. You get 10% off your gear there. And support the attitude and give us the support for the project, No Joke Football Project. So go there, Zazzle.com. We have specials. If you're in outside of the U.S., we have international shops as well. You go to the tab on Zazzle.com all the way to the bottom, and it says Worldwide Shops, and you find your country there, and you can get search Gridiron Beauties, and you can basically shop from your own country, Australia, Canada, UK. Thank you for everybody in those countries that has ordered from us and is supporting our project towards supporting another player and spotlighting them on social media. So let's go into the huddle. Right now we should have our guests in the huddle. Is going to be the talented and amazing coach for former LFL Canada Saskatoon Sirens coach, Chris Lambrus. Chris, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Chris. Good afternoon. Thanks for making the time. You're on with Oscar Lopez and Eric Brown. And I don't know, Coach, did you get to see the ending in Seattle?
I sure did. That was an exciting game.
Yeah, I mean, give us a little perspective on your end. I mean, it started pretty hot. Green Bay, 13 points up first quarter. Seemed okay, no big deal. Seattle's come back from 2 scores down, and all of a sudden they're only able to muster 3 points in the second quarter. But impressive fourth quarter for Seattle and obviously the puncher at the end in overtime.
Yeah, absolutely. I think right out of the gates, you saw a lighter defensive line on Seattle. It looks like that's going to be a factor because Rodgers had a ton of time to throw the ball. They were running it fairly successful. So I thought that was definitely going to be the difference maker. But, I mean, Seahawks, the 12th man, resilient defense, definitely stepped up. And, of course, the onside kick. You hate to put one play on the difference maker, but definitely that was it.
Now, you know, when you go into overtime, Coach, as a coach, on a coaching perspective from your end, a little bit worried, or is it a second chance?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. If you're on Green Bay's side, I think, you know, you have a lot of momentum taken away, and it's definitely hard to come back from that. If you're Seattle, that's exactly it. It's a second opportunity to finish the game and win. And you know, if you're Green Bay's coaching staff, you definitely try and look at it as, you know, we have a second breath. Let's finish the game. Let's do it how we started and get the win.
Now, I know you got something going on at the top of the hour, so we're not going to take much of your time, but we are going to, you know, focus on a couple things in regress in the past, so you can limit yourself to your answers as much as you can, or you can expose as much as you want. We ended up kind of like me and Eric ended up listening to that interview you did in Saskatoon on one of the radio stations, and so you pretty much disclosed a lot of the things that happened within that time frame. We're talking the cancellation of the LFL season two, I believe, in Canada, kind of similar to what happened in Australia, and probably worse because it was probably pulled out under the rug in Canada. So give us a little overview of, you know, the perspective where the ownership of the LFL basically claimed that, you know, the team and the players, or the players themselves, were not ready for that season that apparently was canceled.
Yeah, you know, first of all, I'll just say I really don't know much of what happened in Australia. I can only imagine it's probably similar. But from our perspective and Saskatoon's perspective, we were absolutely prepared to play. And that was probably the one thing that bothered me the most was Mortaz's comments saying how we were not prepared. It wouldn't have been a good quality football product put on the field, and that's why he pulled that. We were training in a full year of off season. So once our season ended in November in NBC in the championship game, you know, they pretty much had their downtime till the holiday season. And it was back in the gym January. We were training, we were running practices full week. Once it geared up in May is when we actually started going into our full, you know, practices of 2-3 times a week on the field, hitting, doing all your fundamentals and that. So to say we weren't prepared when we had essentially probably about 7-8 months of preparation, plus we had new recruits, everybody's going back into their second year, how you can say we'd have a worse product is beyond me.
Yeah, and that bugged a lot of the fans because, you know, it was very good excitement in Canada. It was building up. I mean, local teams, you were getting over that the first year, you know, what I call, you know, negativity stage where you're coming in and everybody's looking at the attire and they're really not focusing on the football. And then you get that 1 year to really kind of showcase what you're able to do. And then all of a sudden the fans kind of react to the football on the field, not so much on the attire anymore. So I think you guys were building that. I mean, especially in the Regina region, you had the Regina Rage and the Saskatoon Siren rivalry going. And that was kind of expected in season two. It was going to be one of those big, you know, rivalry matchups for the season. And it just didn't turn out that way.
No, it didn't. You're exactly right. I mean, the first year is such a crucial year based on how much controversy there is with the LFL. And that was it. Once we got through that and everybody came to the game, we had a lot of disbelievers now approve of it, or at least say, you know what, I'm fine that Saskatoon has his team. You know, that's great. Move on, turn the page, and going forward. We had a great fan base. There's an increasing fan base. Everything was there for it to be a success, but you know, at the end of the day, I think the structure and how Mortaza runs it ultimately is why I think Canada failed, why Australia failed, and why there's a common denominator now. He can't say it was just me and it was our players in Saskatoon, because look what happened in Australia. So obviously, you know, when you group different seasons together and there's all these issues, well, there's only one person at the end of the day that you can blame, and that's Mitch himself.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, the fallback is also coaching. Some of the coaches in Australia did not get paid. They're still not paid, as far as my sources claim. They're not paid. He basically swindled them out of money as well, time, effort, away from family, and all the devotion that takes to, you know, to be a coach at the same time, to put in all the extra time. And I know Casey Simpson was very vocal about, you know, kind of insulting that the owner would even claim that the players were not dedicated and ready to play. So I think, you know, you got to get hats off to the girls for standing up as well.
Yeah, and, you know, that Casey's a prime example to say she wasn't dedicated. She was actually on a baseball scholarship down south at an American college. So she played at an elite level. So she was absolutely committed. Any sport or even in her schooling or in career-wise, she's dedicated and gives it 100%, and everybody across the team was. And that's exactly it. The resources we had versus the amount of time that we had to put in, and the players didn't get anything but probably a free pair of cutters, and they didn't have to pay to play. You know, but how many of the players actually had to take time off of work and lose their nights? And we had, you know, we had family members on the team, meaning, you know, like a lot of them were moms, had family, were married. And so the time they had to take away from the household and actually losing money and beating up their body and all that is exactly why he doesn't have a lot of respect amongst the players and coaches.
Yeah, and it's a shame on that. Eric, you want to ask any questions to Coach Lambros at this point?
Yeah, how you doing, Coach?
Good, good.
I was just curious. Even with everything that you were just mentioning, do you get a sense that a lot of the ladies are ready and willing to come back, or they might have more a sense of, well, you know, I'm done, I'm ready to, you know, move on to something else?
Yeah, you know, that I would say a lot of the players would be torn, and even themselves torn, whether they would come back or not. As when, you know, to give you maybe a little bit of background, when we sat together and had our team meeting, when Mitch, you know, and I and the teams were butting heads, and he was cutting the games back and only cutting the season back, a lot of us sat in a room for a few hours and had that discussion, like, what do we do? We have a passion for football. We have a love of the game. We've already committed, you know, 7-8 months for rookies, now almost 2 years for the vets. It's a tough decision, so I honestly can't even answer that. I know some still love the game and love football and love the competitive nature of it, because for those 60 minutes that you're playing, you can remove all the controversy, the uniforms, Mitch Mortaza. For that 60 minutes when they're battling on the field, that I think would give them, you know, a bit of that desire to want to come back. But then ultimately when you look at how it's ran and all the BS and the non-football issues that you have to deal with, I think that would weigh heavily too. But I would absolutely say it's a back and forth. I couldn't give you a clear answer on that.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that based on the circumstances. So what about the
right.
coaches? Do you feel like they're kind of along the same line as you, like not really sure, you know, who really wants to come back, or are they you know, pretty much resigned to, you know, wanting to come back and get a team together?
Yeah, I would think the coaches definitely would not, from my understanding. I know Regina's coach that was there and some of the issues they went through, and definitely they don't. I don't, and it's not from nothing to do with the players, nothing to do with the actual game of football. It's solely between the issues that I have between Mitch and myself is why I wouldn't. And, I mean, it comes down to just bad business, honestly, in short. It's safety concerns. It's the BS that he pulls, like saying we're going to get a six-game season at Calgary, maybe a team out in Montreal, to all of a sudden now we're playing two games. And it's just a lot of empty promises. It's, you know, over-promising, under-delivering. I don't know what coach or player would want to be in an organization like that.
The bottom line, I think, Coach, at this point, I know you got a couple, 2 minutes here. We got to let you go. But bottom line, Coach, tell us a little bit about Coach Lambros after this LFL debacle. Where are we at now, and where can fans keep up with you? And I know you're back probably to traditional football at this point, right?
Absolutely. I before I took the opportunity with the LFL, I was coaching, I guess, comparative to JUCO football. So I went back and was a special teams coordinator and defensive back coach out in BC. And then I recently went back to my alma mater where I played my college football, and now I'm a defensive assistant for the University of Saskatchewan Huskies team. So a great program. It's the Div 1 top 10 nationally ranked comparable of Canadian football versus the U.S. So I got a really good opportunity. Coaches that coached me gave me the opportunity to come in and help out and do a lot of the film and breaking down the opposition. So that's what I'm going to be doing now and doing that moving forward. So hopefully I can stick with it and ultimately coach one day for a living.
Awesome. Congratulations to that. I mean, it's a lot of work. I know a lot of coaches, they start off in the junior college level and then they build up, obviously, to the more high university. So hats off to you and obviously, your after effects of the LFL. And Eric, at this point, you can relate. Eric's a former player coach. He's also played semi-pro as well. So kind of a, football mindset here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on the show, guys. I appreciate that. Anytime you want to have me back on, I'd more than really do it.
Awesome, Coach. Thank you for the time. I really appreciate it. Have a great event, and we'll keep in touch as well. And safe travels.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Nice talking
Thank
to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, Eric, there you go. Chris Lambers. He's the former coach of the LFL Saskatoon Sirens. And that was, the bottom line with this is just logistics and administration. You have a lousy owner that cannot seem to let go in an administrative facet. I'll give you an example. The LIBF in Mexico. The LIBF is equivalent to the lingerie style of play that the Legends Football League plays. The LIBF in Mexico, the leadership in LIBF Mexico comes from a television marketing background. They ended up setting a sales force in the first year. Sales force for ticketing, sales force for collaborating with soccer stadiums, collaborating with certain indoor arenas. They hooked themselves up with some wrestling promoters that were willing and able to facilitate their arenas for showcasing the talent, the games. And all of a sudden now, season two, because of all that work and Salesforce and of the good turnouts in each of the special all-fantasy events, now they're going to be on TV Azteca starting this next week. And they're going to have the season games, 15 games, I believe it's going to be. So they're going to start broadcasting some of those games and nationally in Mexico. So that's what you can do in 2 years when you aren't fixated as the only person that controls the whole operation.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. If you get that infrastructure together, you got a nice base to build from, and you just go from there. So yeah. So it sounds like they've got it together.
Yeah. And the bottom line is Chris Lambers is a great person and ultimately a great coach. And he was doing a lot of great things in Saskatoon for the players. And just like I mentioned earlier, a couple of players were very vocal. Because it's an insult. When an owner comes to you, like you, Eric, and says, you're just not putting in the time and you've been busting your hump, like he says, for months, and all of a sudden, that's what he claims or that's what he posts and that's what he puts out there, that's very deflating, at the same time discouraging, and then all of a sudden you're like, F you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't see how people would want to do business with him after that, but we'll see what happens, but it's not looking too good.
Yeah, in the Australia debacle, I will tell you from the sources that we have down below, the dedicated athletes in Australia, I mean, you got to give it to them. Personal trainers, every facet of women coming out of, moms, professional women and stuff like that. And to have the rug pulled under them like that, they just didn't take it. So they uprised. The coaching staff did not get paid the first season at all, even though they had a TV contract for 7-8, and it was only benefiting one person. And at this point, we know the reality. One person ended up benefiting from it. So they ended up branching out, and that's how the Ladies Gridiron League was created, the LGL of Australia. And obviously they're trying to kick off in 2015 here, And they're doing it right. They're trying to set up a sales force. They're trying to do some fan basing. They're trying to make sure that their stadium deals make sense, logistics, because, you know, it's all about cost and travel and everything else. And then they're going to pay the players. The players are not going to get paid big money, but, you know, they're going to get paid a certain amount of mileage money, which is basically pretty decent because you're paying gas to go to the venues. So why not pay for travel expenses in that aspect of it? Maybe you don't have room and board, and that's afforded for the player itself, but at least you're giving them gas money to go back and forth either from a practice or from a game perspective. So that's a start.
Yeah, exactly. And believe me, if you can make the players comfortable with knowing that, okay, I can give up a little work time or I can give up a little family time and know that my time playing the game is going to be worth it, then you're going to get more and more coming out. And the more people that come out, the more talent you get. The more talent you get out there, the more attention you get. So, so hopefully they can keep building, and maybe we can go out to Australia and cover a couple games.
Oh, yeah, I'm working on that right now. I'm talking to Keisha about that too. And we're not big enough right now for logistic purposes, you know what I mean, for air travel and stuff like that. But we hope in the future to get some sort of a small sponsor. We're not going to send you on a boat or anything like that, but hopefully the plane would be better overseas. they're amazing women. The bottom line is it's a good sport. It's 7-on-7. You've played it. I mean, it's arena ball style, pretty much. The only intangible, obviously, they don't have the padding that is necessary, but it's no different than the AFL. It's a 7-on-7. It's a different strategic game, just like we talked to Sammy Grisafi last week, and she said, you know, it's not for everybody. She prefers the 11-on-11 game, and some people do, but there's players that excel at the arena level that are amazing athletes.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen, like, in the men's side of it, I've seen a lot of guys that excel in the arena format, but you put them on, you know, 11-11 scenario, they get lost, and vice versa. So, like she said, it's not for everybody. But, anytime, in my opinion, since, you know, football is one of my passions, so anytime that can be elevated is always a good thing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and the awareness level now is women can't play football. The LFL is basically a non-kit. I call it non-kit because it's non-kit. It's a non-kit version of football on a 7-7 or 8-on-8 format, and it's suitable for the ladies. The format in lingerie, and you understand, obviously, the wear and tear, Eric, but the format in lingerie is basically simple. Most fans will go, well, why can't they have a week-to-week game? Well, it's not going to happen when your body's exposed. So you need to have, you know, a 15-day, a three-week layoff for your body to heal. Because otherwise you're putting the body through the grind and now you're prone for major injuries, even beyond an 11-11 full kit where you have padded and everything like that. When you don't have any padding and you're basically in a bikini, technically, so bruises take time to heal, and that kind of stuff has to be over time. So, teams have to play within a certain time frame in order for the players to obviously get better at it and restart.
Yeah, exactly. And you also get a little bit more practice time in there as well. So, as the skill level continues to increase, like over the years, it's gotten better and better. So, having that time off in between games gives you more practice time and, you know, ultimately a better quality on the field. So, which, of course, will bring in more fans, more revenue, et cetera. So, but,
Film study is more key, I think, at the 7-on-7 and 8-on-8 level because it's a shorter field. So you don't have, you don't have the speed stride as you would in a 100-yard field. You basically have more short strides, but you have to make quicker movements.
Yeah, you have to make quicker movements, quicker decisions, especially playing quarterback, because if you have an opportunity to kind of sit back in the pocket and survey what's happening, it's not like you have all day, because eventually your receivers are going to be running to the walls or, you know, they're going to have to stop what they're doing and kind of stand around because of the lack of room. So everything, the decisions have to be that much quicker.
And then we've seen the value of it. I mean, Kurt Warner came from that environment. And I think that's where the greatest show on turf was a benefit to him. It was the first year the outside game never had seen somebody with a quick gun like that. And I think it benefited him to play in the Arena League and actually, you know, have that great success that he had because of the fact that, like you said, his timing was quicker than you normally have it in the NFL.
Yeah, definitely. I think that definitely helped. It could probably help a lot more quarterbacks, you know, coming up that route, especially the ones that aren't really that interested in being students. But, yeah, I mean, you have to throw from all kinds of different angles, release, different release points, and, you know, ultimately, or the bottom line is quicker decisions. You have to be able to anticipate guys being open. You got to be able to throw guys open, and, it just helps you out once you get to that pro game because you do have a little bit more time on your hands, for the deeper routes or the crossing routes, et cetera, so...
In your experience, Eric, you've seen the games in the AFL. I mean, to me, they're pretty intense on a pass rush mentality. I mean, you're not rushing that many bodies, but the physicality is almost similar, right?
Yeah, the physicality is pretty much the same. I know it's played on a much smaller arena. You know, the field's only 50 yards long and 30 yards wide, but some of the impacts are pretty much the same as you would see in an outdoor game because you've got bodies that are just as big. They're just in a smaller space, so they're able to use their quickness a little bit more and power, and that just brings some of the same collisions you would see in the outdoor game, and they're just as fast.
Now, from a coaching perspective, you've got to really switch that up, I think, right? You've got to spend a little bit more time on probably more time on speed, probably, because I know when I've seen AFL games, It's pretty much speed on the corners, and not much goes down the middle. It's mostly corners and strides.
Yeah, because there's more restrictions as far as what you can do, as far as defensive linemen, as far as stunts and things like that. So, and linebackers are more restricted. So it becomes more of a perimeter game, more of a passing down the field type game. Because there are those restrictions where you can't run, stunts and twists and certain linebackers have to stay in a certain area. So it becomes more of a downfield game, more so than perimeter because, you run kind of, 10 steps to your right or your left and you're right at the wall. So, that goes to more so the anticipation part is where you have to know, okay, this wall is coming up. I have to make a move now. Versus, just looking back at the quarterback and still running.
Right. Have you seen a couple of the LFL games, if you got a chance to watch that? Because a lot of the girls, their timing is really good in certain aspects of it, but the blocking and the strategic with blocking really, allows certain players to be really good, especially if you're athletic, a little taller, reach, and stuff like that. So depending on who you have at receiver, a person with height does really well in the indoor game because of the fact that, they don't have to jump as much versus somebody that doesn't have the height.
Yeah, the height definitely helps. It's especially, either quarterback or receiver because you have a lot of traffic that you have to look through, and it's much easier to look over it than it is to look through it. But, I've gotten to watch – I haven't been able to watch a full game, but I've been watching, clips here and there ever since it started. And, that's how I know, that, these are some quality athletes. It's not like a bunch of neighborhood women just running around, flipping the football around. I mean, you can see that there's an actual skill set and, they're coached well and they definitely know what they're doing.
Yeah, and I'm not a plus for it. I mean, he's done a good job, and I'm talking about the ownership. He's done a good job of trying to strategize it in an NFL-style mentality. I just think, the leadership aspect of it, the administrative side of it, could be outsourced or could be, given responsibility to other folks so that he doesn't become the end-all of the decision-making. And I think that's where the progression of the league would be better if they just, if he understood that and understood the fact that it takes other people with different qualities to bring things to the table and to enhance the brand. And I think that's where the bottom line is. Like Coach Lambros was saying, you know, it's really not the players or the coaches at this point in this league. It really has to do with the ownership not willing to let go and, you know, expand in a professional business manner. And until that happens, all the promises and all the hypes, I mean, if you go to the you go to their website and you go to their Facebook page or their social media sites, you know, all these claims. I mean, we were supposed to have a world game in conjunction with the soccer World Cup. And that was announced like 2 or 3 years ago. So you think you had 3 years to plan this, and in the end, nothing came about. So, I mean, you got to get rid of the hype. You know, anybody can post anything on social media and do a teaser or come up with some sort of cute video or end result. But the bottom line is, you know, post something legit and not a teaser. Put something where it's concrete. The fans want to know that it's concrete, not we're working on this and we're going to get this out. Just like you posted, you know, hey, we're going to get a bobblehead out. Okay, well, the player in the bobblehead probably no longer works for you and isn't in the league. So why would you make an image and insult a player like that? To create a bobblehead that of a player that probably isn't coming back or isn't even going to be in the league. So at this point, we don't even know. I mean, be more, you know, respectful of the fact that if the player is going to be in the league, at least announce it to the fans before you announce the bobblehead and say, you know, X amount of player will be coming back for season 5, and then this is a commemorative bobblehead for the league. But don't, you know, just because you have rights in the contract that says you can use their imaging for future use, you know, you're just using them just to get hype out there. But the bottom line is, you know, be real, be respectful. In Canada alone, Eric, I can tell you right now, you know, if he wasn't ready financially, it's okay. The fans understand that you have limited resources when you're on your own sometimes. And if it's a financial nightmare, it's better to disclose it as a financial nightmare than to try to cover up as being this huge global entity, which you're not. And then at the same time, you know, you disappoint the fans, you're disappointing the players, and ultimately disappoint the coaches. And then you basically, you know, you black eye your brand. That's what happened.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like there's a ton of ego involved. But, I mean, you look at all the great leaders out all throughout history. They're good at putting people in place that are strong where they're weak at. You know, so if marketing is not your thing, you know, put somebody in place that knows marketing. You know, it's you know, putting that infrastructure in there. If you're not good at sales, find people that are and put them in there. I'm sure there's plenty of people that'd be willing to volunteer. I mean, you wouldn't have to pay them. I'm sure they'd just be interested in building their resume for something in the future. But he could take advantage of that. So a lot of times you just have to, you know, check your ego at the door and get some other people in place to, you know, to get things moving.
Yeah, and that's been the issue, I think, with this league right now. It's been the issue overseas, as we're talking overseas, with the failure of LFL Canada in the second year, now the failure of LFL Australia. He ends up rebranding LFL Australia to LFL Oceania, which I have no idea what that means anyways, but, you know, because apparently he's going to put some teams in New Zealand. And at this point, you know, he can put a team in Antarctica and the fans don't care at this point. As long as the real games are played, that's the only thing the fans care about. They don't care about whether you're going to put a team in Africa. You know what I mean? Just come on. Just get over it. You know what I mean? Just, you know, concentrate on what you can control, which is your staple brand was the LFL US. You have amazing stars in the United States. You have the Monique Axiolas, the Heather Furs. You got, you know, Ann Erlers before that when she left. I mean, you have some branded stars in this league. I mean, you got, you know, Dakota Hughes in Atlanta. You got some name stars that you can work with and build a marketing aspect of it, but he fails to do that. I mean, I would, in my perspective is, I'm not branching out of LFL US until LFL US is profitable. Why would you venture overseas when you're not profitable? To me, that's just a greedy move. Just a greedy move, just to move out and try to swindle people from, you know, Tenelle Davis mentality when he was trying to swindle Irwindale to move the Raiders to Irwindale and build a stadium and probably didn't even plan to be there. So I don't want to compare, I don't want to compare him to Mortaza, but the reality is that, you know, if you're going to be a swindler, eventually things catch up to you and then, you know, things go bad. And that's what's happening. That's what happened in Canada. And this is what's happening in Australia.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, Eric, you watched a couple of the LFL perspective on it. So from a fan that hasn't really been involved with it, what's your perspective of the marketing? Do you feel like the marketing is something that can still be scaled back but still professionally, you know, draw in a crowd?
Yeah, I think so. I think, in my opinion, what they would need to do is put the players out in front, not just, you know, because of, you know, how they're dressed and, you know, market that way, but the actual playing ability, because there's still a lot of people out there that don't really take it seriously because they don't feel like, you know, that it's a quality brand on the field. But I think if they market, you know, find some way to market the actual playing ability, I mean, you know, how they run the ball, how they throw the ball, the tackling, the blocking. I mean, you can see that there's an actual skill set there. So I think if they could find a way to kind of package that and put that out front, you know, then that could, you know, help things to take off. You know, maybe, you know, camps here and there, or maybe have some of the players, you know, teaching some of the younger kids in the little leagues, you know, things like that. You know, maybe somehow if they can find a way to, you know, kind of get the NFL behind them in some kind of form or fashion to help get them out there, I think that would help. But just like the WNBA, a big motivating factor to get people to the games was the quality of play. So I think that would definitely help with the LFL.
Yeah, and I think that's the bottom line. But you know, when you got somebody at the top that isn't structured correctly, there's a lot of negatives, and I think that's where the building part is. We're gonna have Pete Richmire on today, and I'm waiting to see if he's gonna call in. But you know, given the fact that Seattle won, I don't know if he's gonna call in because it's on a big high today. So we might have to reschedule him because he's, you know, he's on the Erica Lynn Anderson bandwagon probably as well. You know, where she's gonna be a happy camper tonight by the end of the night, if the Patriots keep up their mojo, as they say. So we'll wait for Pete, see if Pete calls in here. We got about 15 minutes on airtime, so hopefully Pete will call in and he has some time. Otherwise, we'll reschedule him, and when he calms down from this huge excitement of beating Green Bay at CenturyLink, that was a huge game. So, Eric, let's go into college football. We didn't get a chance to talk about it much last week, so between us, let's talk about this. Ohio State, I'm one of the bad people because I chose the Ducks, and I think you chose the Ducks. So technically, in Kishi, who's not here, we have to applaud her because obviously she had more faith than we did in Ohio State.
Right.
So what did you think of the game and the third string quarterback story of winning the national championship in the first playoff format?
Well, I got to tell you that very first series that the Ducks came out on offense, they just ran the ball down Ohio State's throat and scored, and I was like, oh, here we go. It's going to be, you know, just like it was when they played Florida State. But Ohio State, they just ended up being, you know, a lot more physical overall. And, you know, it basically, you know, the old school teaching from the old school coaches is the team that hits the hardest, the longest, typically is going to come out on top. And, you know, pretty much that's what happened. As far as Cardell, I think he made a good decision as far as, you know, going back to school, because there's just a whole lot of stuff that he hasn't seen yet to be ready for the NFL. But I mean, what better way to end the season than, you know, winning a national championship, winning the Sugar Bowl? I mean, what was he, 3-0, you know, for his starts? So I mean, that's just crazy right there. But got to tip your hat to Ohio State.
Now, Eric, you're on a football perspective. I'm not so much a played football, but, you know, reality is this. You are chopped down two players, and now you have to put a third-string quarterback. Confidence isn't so high, right?
Confidence isn't that high initially, I mean, players get a sense of, you know, what guys can do, you know, just from being at practice, being at the games. You kind of get a sense of who can do what. So, and especially, you know, Urban Meyer being a coach, I mean, you can't lose too much confidence with him, you know, leading the team. but also at that level. I mean, this is the highest level in college football, so everyone that's there was, you know, pretty much all this and all that in high school. So, I mean, there's really not a whole, in most positions, there's really not that big of a difference from first string to second string to third string. A lot of times it's just a matter of, you know, just hanging in there, just, you know, waiting for your opportunity to come, and when it comes, you seize it, versus just not playing because you're just terrible. You know, if you're not that good, you're not going to make it to that level anyway. So maybe initially, once, you know, the first guy went down, they're like, okay, I'm not sure. Then the second guy comes in and he goes down, and they're like, maybe they were, you know, I'm not too sure about this. But I mean, you can see, you know, pretty much from the start whether a guy has it or not. So they seem to have that confidence in him.
Now, I was very impressed with the Buckeye pass rush. They kind of contain that, you know, the speed of the Ducks. And once they took control of that, I think it was more frustrating for Oregon, you know, in that facet. And I think that's basically what happened. They got frustrated, took them out of their game element, and then all of a sudden, you know, here you go. That's a different ballgame.
Right. And also the Ohio State just dominated at the line of scrimmage. I mean, that's where it all starts from. So if you have a bad game there, it's just a domino effect. Your secondary is going to have a bad game, and the other team's going to be picking up yards, and eventually those yards turn into points. And early on in the game, Ohio State's offensive line was just dominating Oregon's defensive line, so they were able to sustain drives and just wear them out. And instead of Oregon wearing them out, it was the other way around. So. It ended up being, you know, definitely a good game. I think Ohio State opened a lot of eyes. So, you know, they'll be the team to beat this year.
Now, you know, you've got to give credit to the coaching staff because, you know, the bottom line is underdogs, when you're underdogs, I mean, I looked at them when they came in. They looked like they didn't even care that they were ranked fourth. You know what I mean? Because a lot of press was done. Remember, we were talking about it during the committee time, and oh my God, do they deserve to be number four? You know, whatever. And now, you know, the end result is, yeah, damn right, they deserve to be number four, and they win the title.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Now, I kind of, now that there is, you know, a number one team for sure, but you know, I kind of wonder what a matchup would have been like if it was somebody else, like, you know, maybe like an Alabama, or you know, a Boer. I guess, you know, a bigger, more physical team, what the outcome would have been like. But, I mean, yeah, they definitely earned it. And you know, they showed who's number one.
Yeah, and you know what? And the two games before that, when the SEC, you know, was the poll hype, as you want to call it now, SEC was a poll hype, and they get beat. And not that Alabama got beat badly, but overall, you know, most people, you know, on Twitter and Facebook and social media, they were going – well, this is reality now for the SEC. They're not as great of a juggernaut that people claim to be in the past years. But, you know, bottom line is Alabama did not lose by much. So it's not like, you know, the SEC is just – we're just going to write it off, you know, because these two West Coast and Ohio just, you know, kind of supplanted them technically in this round. So your perspective on the SEC right now, what do you think? Is it still the same?
Yeah, well, my perspective is still the same. I still think they're the dominant conference overall, but a lot of people have known for the past few years now that gap is closing pretty rapidly between some of the other conferences and the SEC. I mean, you look at, just the Big Ten conference itself. They were known for years, for decades, for being, you know, just big and physical, just like the big brother beating up on the little brother. But what happened was the SEC started finding, you know, the faster, quicker, better athletes overall, putting them together and just, you know, dominating from there. So I think some of the other conferences are catching on to that, and they're starting to add speed and quickness and athleticism to their programs as well. So that gap is closing. Not only closing, it's closing very rapidly. So I think you'll start to see a lot more parity coming up in the next couple of years here between the major conferences.
Now we talk about the committee, and so we got to give the committee hats off for making the right decision at this point, putting Ohio State in the mix. And Ohio, I mean, the program is it's a very good program given what they've done this year. We will see, you know, how well they are in terms of next year. Even though they're champions right now, you get a sense that they're going to be back.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard to go against Urban Meyer. I mean, every program he's been at, they've ended up winners by the time he was done with them. So, I definitely can see them, at the very least, a Rose Bowl champion, if not, national champion again. I mean, you look at what he's got coming back. I mean, potentially the three quarterbacks are coming back. Probably not likely, but that's still the potential. And just reload and go from there.
Yeah, it seems like a good situation there for long term. Now, where do you see Oregon? I mean, was it overly hyped, or did we just set them on a high pedestal? After that, before the championship game, everybody just assumed that they were going to come in and just blaze through Ohio State and look at the end result.
I don't necessarily think it was over hype, but I think what happened was people just saw that the way that they won. It was just basically they just wear you down over the course of four quarters. But I think Ohio State had the advantage of being able to watch all of that and then be able to formulate a game plan on how to do it. And basically the blueprint is you just got to be more physical than they are and, just dominate that defensive line and, take your shots down the field as well at the right times. And, you can handle them. You just have to – and I know Oregon kind of gets that knock where they're not a physical team, but they proved that they are a physical team when they played Florida State. But Ohio State just ended up being more physical than they were.
Now, Florida State, we talked about how, that was a bad sportsmanship and all that stuff. On a rebound mode, I think they'll be back. They got their egos kind of, sucked in. Somebody punched them in the gut, and that day they didn't show up. And just it goes to show that it's one game in or out, and you got to be ready.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the whole season is pretty much a playoff, I think they'll be back. They just need – I don't know who they have coming out at quarterback, but as long as they have somebody that's pretty solid, they'll be back. The issue is if they don't have someone at quarterback, then, where are they going to be at? So,
yeah. Give us an update. I'm on the road right now, so give us an update on Pats and Colts. Where are we at now?
It is right before halftime. It's 16 seconds before halftime. New England is winning 14-7. They're still, I wouldn't necessarily say dominating, but, they're still, kind of keeping the Colts at bay right now. So coming up on just before halftime, there's a timeout. So we will see where this game leads.
So now, at this point, my prediction was Luck to beat Manning and Brady. Still an option there. Highly likely or highly unlikely, Mr. Brown?
I would say it's unlikely. I wouldn't say highly unlikely, but I'd say it's unlikely because the Colts just make too many mistakes. You can't, give the ball to New England. You can't be jumping off sides, making mental mistakes. And the Colts are notorious for doing that. They've gotten better the past few weeks, but there's still that element there. They've already done it once this game, which led to 7 points already. So now, who knows? New England's going to have a big letdown in the second half. It's been a crazy playoff so far, but assuming things go the way they are now, I would expect New England to come out on top.
Wow. So I'm expecting Brady not to lose. Even though I predicted if it's an upset, it's going to be, Luck and truly Luck for him to beat New England. But anything is possible at this point. Like you said, there's two more quarters to go, a lot of football to play. Let's get to the rundown here. We talked about earlier about the LIBF when we had the conversation between the Legends Football League. LIBF now will be on TVS Deca for the season, 2015 season. You can follow them on Twitter at LIBF Oficial on Twitter. You can go to Facebook and you can follow the Liga Iberoamericana de Bikini Football, and that's on their website. And if it's too much for you in terms of verbiage, just follow our link at our Facebook page at Gridiron Beauties on Facebook, and the link's going to be there on the right. Or you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow the at LIBF Oficial link, and you can it'll take you to the Facebook page on their profile page. So in the women's game, we have tryouts. Very crucial time, Eric, for tryouts for anything in football, but overall for spring football right now, a lot of tryouts. The WFA, the Women's Football Alliance in the United States, the Independent Women's Football League in the United States, the WSFL, which is the Women's Spring Football League in the United States, which is full kit, 11-on-11 full kit leagues. They're getting ready for their tryouts. And you can follow the team updates at WFB Talk on Twitter, at Backseat Coach on Twitter. And thanks to him, there's a link on our Facebook page. You can go watch also the updates weekly on Women's Gridiron Weekly, and that's on courtesy of Backseat Coach. And you can go to the link there, subscribe, and be a subscriber there. And you can get all the updates on where the tryouts are at and stuff. So, ladies, if you're interested, you can follow the individual three leagues in the U.S. At IWFL on Twitter, at WFA Football on Twitter. Just announced, the WFA announced that their Facebook is now changed. Their link's going to be more simpler. It's facebook.com/WFA Football. So you can find them also on Facebook. The WSFL as well on Facebook. You can just look up Women's Spring Football League as well. In Canada, where we're going to be at all year this year in Canada, thanks to Candace Ward and the WWCFL players out there. In Canada, you can follow the Western Canadian Women's Football League, the WWCFL, on Twitter, at WWCFL. You can follow the Maritime Football League, and that's MWFL Football on Twitter. And then the new league that's going to launch in 2015, which is the Central Canadian Women's Football League at the TCWFL. So we're going to be following them closely, as well as internationally. Thank you to all the amazing players in Australia. We love you guys. We appreciate your support. Thank you for ordering, as well as the players in the UK. Beverly Marwood, thank you for sending out that pic to us on the leggings that we sent out there for the award that you had as well. And then in Spain, we want to say shout out to all the Spanish girls as well for supporting us. We are looking forward to working with the Italian leagues out there in the future, as well as the German leagues and some of the French leagues we're working on right now. We also are going into Sweden and Finland. So this is no hype. We are working towards it. No guarantees here. We're still making strides in communications at this point. So internationally, No Joke Football brand. Thank you to Zazzle.com. Zazzle.com is our official shop, and it's powered by Zazzle. And the shop has international sites, and you can go to the Zazzle.com site, go all at the very bottom, and it says Worldwide on the tab. You click in Worldwide, and you can find the Gridiron Beauty shop for No Joke Football gear in every country, Canada, UK, you name it, Japan. There's various countries there. So you can get kitted and geared up for No Joke Football gear in your own country site and get delivered that merchandise. You can also order online and use OrderShip 10 and get a discount as well. So, Eric, almost out of time here, but it's been a pretty interesting show. I know Pete couldn't make it today because of the fact that the Seahawks won. He's probably overrated and didn't, probably lost his voice and didn't want to come on the show with a staggering voice like that. So we'll give him a pass. And we'll reschedule with him, and it's always exciting. He's always a good friend of the show, and he will make some time for us in the future. Next week, we have the lovely and beautiful Manna Allison of the website MissGridiron.com. You can follow her on Twitter at MissGridiron9, and you can also follow her off our Facebook page as well, Miss Gridiron. And she plays for the Carolina Phoenix of the IWFL as well. So the lovely and talented and beautiful Manna Allison will be here next week. We're going to talk a little bit about entrepreneur. We're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming season in the IWFL and what she's got going on. And she's obviously one of our network partners as well. So hats off. We'll see Manna Allison next week. Eric, anything else that that I maybe missed?
No, it seems like you covered everything there. So just ready to get to this New England game and see what happens.
So for Eric Brown, Oscar Lopez, and for the absent Nkechi Free, and obviously the probably happy right now Erica Lynn Anderson, which your Patriots are winning. So Oscar Lopez, Eric Brown, we will see you here next week on the Blitz talking and it's Super Bowl probably, right, Eric? Super Bowl at this point, talking Super Bowl. It's going to be Seahawks, and we don't know yet if it's Patriots or Colts. So before we go, Eric, you're taking Colts or Patriots?
Well, my head goes with the Patriots, but my wife's from Indianapolis, so she's in the other room screaming her head off right now, so my heart's going to have to go with Indianapolis.
To be on the safe side, I would say go Colts. Thank you very much. So I will go Pats, because if I don't, Erica will probably beat me down, and that's not a fun thing to do. So go Pats, and Eric's taking the Colts on the other side because he has to, not because he wants to. So we'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to The Blitz on Blog Talk Radio, and you can find us on ultimatesportstalk.com. For Eric Brown, Oscar Lopez, have a great Sunday, and we look forward to the Super Bowl matchup next week. See who it's going to be. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon.